So namaste, and thank you for coming today. It's good to see everyone here. We have a couple of our new sannyasis here. So Premadas is now Premananda Giri. And Jyoti Das, he is now Niranjananda Giri. So we have some new names. Shiva Sundari Das is not here this week, but she will be here next week, and her new name is Siddhananda Giri. And we have one more, but he doesn't come up very often. He lives way down in Chehalis, and so his name is changed from Gyaneshwar to Alakananda Giri. So we have four new sannyasis, which is a wonderful thing to see. So moving right along, as Swamiji says, I welcome you all with great love and respect. How can one keep up the meditation practice when you feel tired or ill? This is when it takes dedication. It takes dedication to continue with your meditation practice when you're tired or ill. Sometimes, as you're going through this, you're going to be releasing things. Okay? And it's going to be sometimes a little strain on you. So you really, really need to keep up the practice to break through these times as well. You'll come out of the illness much more rapidly if you continue to do your practice and your meditation and your mantras. Roddy, why are you licking the microphone? Okay. She's spreading that love around. So, yeah, you need to continue through. Did you have anything else you wanted to ask on that?
Well, I was the one who asked it, and I guess my question was, I do have a tendency to push on through, and maybe that isn't always a good thing either. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was asking. I guess in the moment, you can figure that out for yourself. Go to bed or push on through and continue.
If you have to lay down, then you can lay down and meditate. Okay, there's no restrictions on meditation. So, yeah. You use whatever condition you're in for meditation. And to find out you're not this body, question it, am I this body? What is it that's ill?
I've been going through this bronchitis for a couple of weeks. It's just, I mean, how can you meditate? You just keep coughing and coughing. I mean, you can't get any continuous meditation. You meditate a little bit and you cough and it breaks your, you know, train of thought. It's just very frustrating.
Yeah, you just keep coming back to the moment and see that this too will pass. And if you're going through illness, it's good to come and get some energy work done during that time.
Good idea.
Yeah, yeah. So stay after and get some energy work done today. Okay. So let's get this moved through. Because anytime you're doing the meditation, you're changing the structure of the physical body as well. Yeah. Okay? So the more that you, the same thing with the crystals, you've seen how it affects the blood. If you continue with the meditation, you continue to bring this in, it's going to change it much more rapidly to help you cycle through it much quicker than if you don't.
Well, and I was wondering too. I've been doing the mantras with the contemplation of self CD, and so I've been doing the chanting. And I'm wondering if that isn't what's causing it.
It can cause you to start releasing things. Yeah,
it's all bronchial sinus, which is all what you're kind of vibrating when you're doing mantras. Mm.
It's anytime you're doing the practices, the meditations, or listening to the CDs, the contemplation of self, or the mantra CDs, then you're going to start releasing things. You'll find that even more when you take the full initiation and have the mantra CDs, because it carries a vibration with it. Can you let them in, Premananda? Thank you. So, yeah, it's just push through. If you have to lay down and do a meditation, then lay down. But try to carry through. Try to carry through. Sorry, our little devotees showed up. 6'5". It's good to see you. Thank you for coming, Chandrasekhar. Yeah, please don't whack your head on the light fixture again.
No, that's okay.
Does mind influence the earth? The tsunami. Do events such as the recent tsunami represent punishment or the purge of bad karma? No, I wouldn't say it represents punishment. Definitely not. I would say that it represents man's, man has changed the conditions of the earth with their greed. They've created the hot house effect, all of these different things that are happening. But it has nothing to do with punishment. God is not up there sending punishment on mankind for this. Man has free will to change and to start respecting the earth. Okay? And once you start respecting the earth and get rid of the pollution and all the things that have happened, then the earth is going to also start to settle down a little bit more. But, yeah.
If you do have bad karma, does it get expunged by having to do things that you wouldn't normally do, like go to war or go through an illness?
It just causes you to start reflecting more and letting go of stuff eventually. Where you put yourself, you know, that's what you're going to encounter. That's all karma is. Doesn't mean, yeah, but everyone still has that seed of perfection in them. Okay? Underneath of all that is the seed of perfection. It's just covered up with these imperfections, the seeming imperfections. But, you know, this thing about you've got bad karma, so you're going to encounter this or that, or you're going to be punished is... You know, we bring about our own punishment.
Because they say, like, sometimes someone's born blind, and a lot of times people get healed, but they say, like, if it's bad karma, then, you know, you're learning a lesson or something by being blind.
So it doesn't have to be necessarily be bad karma. You could face difficult things in your life which have nothing to do with bad karma. It just means that you're choosing to learn a certain type of a lesson. But don't equate it with bad karma. There are some very wonderful children that are brought into the earth that have very severe disabling things. Doesn't mean they have bad karma. Sometimes they take that on to teach someone else something. So don't always think that somebody has something that it's necessarily bad karma. Sometimes we get the left-handed blessings, okay? We go through very difficult things to learn certain lessons. But doesn't mean that it's stemming out of bad karma. Okay. Do we get a new body, human, when in spiritual dimensions? Depends on the spiritual dimension. There are some, you know, you can go to dimensions where it's just very much a light body. You have other dimensions where it's seeming a little bit more solidified. It's, you know, there are different dimensions, lots of different dimensions.
Well, it's just that I've had dreams or kind of like visions of... being on the other side, and like scientists are saying now, you know, they're trying to determine who is the observer. Like, do your eyes see, or is it somebody else? So they came to the conclusion that it's really your spirit that sees, And so, like, I think, I don't know if it's in the Bible or not, but they say that we'll be given a new glorified body. And
yeah, it's like a light body. It's a rarefied body.
My visions have been, though, that, you know, it's very human, just like I'm seeing you now, except for there's no substance.
Same thing.
So that's how we can...
It's a rarefied body. That's what rarefied means. It doesn't have as much heavy corporeal substance. But even if you took this body apart, it really doesn't have as much corporeal substance as you think it does.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. It's all just different, varying shades of energy. That's all. The slower it's vibrating, the more dense it appears. But it's really not dense in the end.
So the actual purpose of being in the body is to sort of have a challenge that allows us to learn lessons that maybe would be take a lot more time in the spiritual form.
In the spiritual form, you don't have as much challenge. You don't have as much challenge as you do here. So, yeah, you can learn things a little more rapidly. But it doesn't matter, though. What's time? What's time anyway? Doesn't matter.
Okay, so we're just going to go on and on and on. So
there is no death. There's no life, no beginning, no ending. In when you come down to it,
right?
Okay.
So when we did incarnate, so that we could actually obtain enlightenment, and essentially,
yeah, for enlightenment. And what is enlightenment? Just to discover who and what you are. More importantly, what you're not. That you're not this limited being that you think you are. You're not this limited form. You are that which is aware of experiences. Okay? So much more than you think you are, and so much less also. But this only comes when you're doing the meditation, you're doing the practice. You find out eventually that all that exists is from Absolute, or this one essence. Okay. All bondage is created and sustained by yourself. You're holding it in place. You have the freedom to have bondage. Okay. You have the freedom to have bondage, and you have the freedom to let go of bondage. Okay. Oops. That one that's jumping out of the bowl. What does Sat Chit Anand mean? Sat is absolute truth, that which is. Chit means consciousness, and Anand is bliss. The bliss of that truth, which is unchanging. Okay, it's basically referencing absolute, or that which is the essence of your being. Minus all the coverings. Okay. Just absolute truth of being, absolute life. I'm making a mala for Swami. Can I use Swarovski crystals? Does it matter if they are smooth? Do you suggest something else? What should it be strung on? Okay. You can make a mala just about any out of anything that you want to. But usually in the Shaivite traditions, we use either, you know, crystals or or rudrakshas. But just as a, you know, a keepsake, you can make it out of anything you'd like. Yeah. Go for it. Enjoy. Yeah. Especially if you're making the small one, you know, the wrist type small one hand, that you can carry. Yeah. That would be very nice. Any materials that you want, enjoy. Be creative. Okay. It's not going to be thrown away if it's not just straight out of rudraksha, you know. Is it possible for one body to have more than one soul? Okay, what do you mean by that?
Right now there's some psychologists who are working with clients who have either some fragment of consciousness from another person, or similar to demon possession, but it was like in a moment of stress, they had a, they're saying there was an opening and someone died, and instead of going into the light, and they actually entered into this other person's body. So there's like two souls in
one
body.
No, there's no two souls in there. They influence the mind. That's all. There are no two souls in one body. No, absolutely not. No. And none of these things can take over anything unless you give it permission. But what it is influencing the mindset. That's what it is. Influencing the consciousness, influencing the mindset. Okay. All of these disembodied spirits are nothing other than other people that were born and they're of a lower vibration and they're trying to cling on to someone else, you know, to get their vicarious fix. Try to influence them in some manner to doing something that they were, you know, that they were involved in before when they were on Earth. But
so they actually still have a kind of influence on somebody? Because what the doctor was saying was, like, there was, like, okay, a guy died in Vietnam, or three of his buddies died in Vietnam around him, and so they were sort of like, well, he says attached, but are they... Are those souls gone into the other world? Are they still hanging around?
Depends. It could just be this guy's mind fragmenting as well, trying to hang on to them, having that guilt complex that he's still there and they're gone. He could be trying to manufacture their identity and hold on to it. It could be due to a lot of different reasons. Okay. But no, there aren't other numerous souls in one body. And there's only really one essence in the end, only one. So this idea of numerous only comes out with divisions of mind play, okay?
Well, then about the demon possession, is it possible then that people are possessed by a demon?
Forget about it, okay? Forget about it. It's another mindset. It's being possessed by some other, it's called, you know, these different mindsets or different spirits, different, the spirit. You have a spirit of lust or you have a spirit of love. Okay. It's a mindset. Okay. So it can be gone in an instant.
So, but
if you let go of it, it's gone in an instant.
Okay. I can understand that part, but what about, like, when Jesus cast out demons?
Yeah, it was gone in an instant. Why? Because it was a mindset. That's it. Change your mindset. Finish. Boom. Gone. Okay.
But those demons actually asked, like, you know.
Why are you so focused on demons? Demons are shadows. It has no substance other than what you're allowing it to have and giving it. Okay? Is it higher than the absolute? If it's not higher than the absolute, why are you worried about it? Why are you focused on it? Because if you're focusing on that, then that's what you're going to manifest. Is that what you want to manifest? All right, then let go of it. Focus on the light. Why are you focusing on shadows?
Well, I'm just trying to learn, you know, for myself so that when I encounter it, I'll have some knowledge of it.
There's nothing you need to encounter.
I mean, if I'm dealing with clients who feel that they see ghosts.
If they have a problem, send them up here. Okay? Okay? Because that darkness cannot stand the light. Okay? If there's some darkness there, it's going to go. That's it. Do you think Christ went around, oh my God, this might be a encounter, a demon, what happens? You know, no. Did any of the people that traveled with him, were they worried about it? No, they knew they had authority over it. It's nothing. It's a shadow. Okay? Quit giving it so much substance. You replace the shadow with the truth, with the light, and then it has nowhere to hide. It's gone, finished. Okay? It's released, finished. You encounter a lot of beliefs, but beliefs are beliefs, that's all.
So I tell them basically, it's not true. There's not two people in your body.
There are not two people in the body. If you can't deal with it, send them here. Okay? If it's beyond what you can deal with, send them here. Okay? There are ways to deal with it quite effectively. Explain celibacy for your sannyasi couples. I don't want to break the vows. Also, I don't want to waste energy. Yeah, maybe I should set up a class for sannyasi couples. Yeah. You plan on having children? Not trying to? That's something to.
They want to have children.
No, you can't answer for them. No, grandmothers. No, grandmothers have no say in this. I'm sorry. Potential grandmothers have to stay out of this. That has nothing to do with it. Yeah, well, we don't always get what we want.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's. Yeah. Well, he's going
to
take a lot of. A lot of care for a long time, so yeah. But no, it depends on what you choose for the path, you know. Because anytime, of course, if you decide to have a child, you have to make a commitment for 18 plus years. Okay? That takes precedence if you make that commitment. And if you make that commitment, then somebody has to stay home and watch the child. They're not able to come to do meditation, to do, you know, so it depends. How focused are you on your path to realization? Or do you want to raise a child? There are a lot of children that can still be amazing children, okay? But that's not everyone's path to have children. Okay? It's not everyone's path to have children. Some people it's their path to have children. Other people it's not their path to have children. Mm-hmm. So that has to be a personal decision and something that we'll speak on. The ramifications of both. I don't push you either way to have children or to not have children. That has to be a personal choice. But if you're having children, it's a commitment for 18 years. Okay. Plus. Yeah, minimum. Minimum 18-year commitment. Okay. Very important. But if you decide not to have children, okay, and then you work and you help each other on your path and to do the meditation and to, you know, to keep each other going forward. And yes, celibacy is good. It's good to be celibate if you can. But of course, couples are couples. And so if you choose to have a sexual relationship, there is a way to go into it in a more heightened way, to see your partner as absolutely divine. Okay, and you go in with that and try to let go of holding and your own going into it with the feeling, I need to get this satisfied or whatever. And if you can let go of that, you can go into a type of a samadhi. But we can discuss that more. It's a deeper level type of the other type of practice. Okay. Because it's not about body consciousness. It's not about having better, longer orgasms. It's about letting go of body consciousness. Okay. So this is the thing. Sometimes if you're celibate, but you're craving that, then you become even more conscious awareness of it. So sometimes it's better just to get it out of the way. Okay? It's about coming to a stillness. So one way that's right for someone might be wrong for someone else. We have to look at that on an individual basis, because we want to become not more body conscious, but less body conscious. Okay? So if you want, we'll have a day you come and we'll discuss it in more detail. Okay. But that's a good question. And it shows a great sincerity for the path and for the vows you've taken. So I appreciate that.
I don't understand the deal about celibacy, to tell you the truth.
Celibacy seems to me like pretty uniquely Indian or Hindu.
And no.
No?
No.
Oh, I suppose Catholics in the priest, but nobody else. I just don't understand.
Monks and nuns in most traditions are going towards celibacy. Why? Because it's the inner path, inner contemplation, to try to go within and let go, like I said, less body consciousness, to go within and try to strip away layers rather than creating more attachments. So there's a lot that has to do with it. Also, if you're stirring up that type of thing, you're also losing, it also loses a bit of energy when you're having the orgasms and stuff. They can lose a little bit of body energy in that. Go ahead. Your attempts at celibacy.
Well, this is a very central issue to spiritual path in my view. The energy
we need to have you where we can actually hear.
The energy that represents sexuality, it can be a tremendous impetus in the spiritual path. It can literally supercharge meditation practice. And it's also, of course, very difficult to do. So you have to, you know, find a balance with it. And as you evolve over time, it becomes a lot easier. But it is a very, very central issue to the spiritual path, in my view. Especially if you happen to be in a relationship and attempting to do celibacy. Because in my early days in the spiritual path, I was married. I didn't take any vows of celibacy, but I discovered the utility of holding sexual energy and redirecting sexual energy. Anyhow. That's about all I have to say right now.
Yeah, it's a two-edged sword. Okay, it's a the sexuality part of it is a two-edged sword.
I understand if you're not married, and you know, I look at Thich Nhat Hanh and all of the monks and are celibate. Although there is an area for married couples too, but if you're married, to me, it's about merging and becoming one. So it's increases the love and the energy within the relationship.
Like I said, there's a certain way to do it, and there's a way not to do it. Okay, there's a certain way to and a way not.
So that's okay.
If you know how to put this in to place. Okay, but there's a way to and a way not to. There are tantric ways to and there are ways not to. But if it's just going out for sex, I guarantee you're going to become more body conscious, more body aware. You're not tempting to merge anything at that point. You're trying to get your own jollies, okay? This is something totally different.
Okay, I understand that. I'm just
okay. So there is a way to it, but to do it, where you lose yourself within it. Okay, where you lose yourself within it, and then there's only one, but there's a specific type of way to do that. So you don't just say, "Yeah, you're married. Go out and have sex." No. Okay, there are specific practices, and there are specific ways to do that. But like I said, you have to see the partner as absolute divine and totally let go of your identification with yourself in that. Okay. But most marriages are not that. Most marriages are not set up that way. If they were, they wouldn't have divorce in the world.
Right. I see marriage as a path.
It can be part of the path, yes. This is why I said I want to see this tradition updated. I want to see it done also amongst with couples. I want to see this updated to be brought more mainstream, okay? But this takes an understanding. It takes an understanding of what it is and some other instruction in this. Okay.
It's not common knowledge.
No, it's not common knowledge. If it was, there wouldn't be so much divorce in the world. If one really respected their partner and saw them as, you know, an absolute part of the divine, and they were absolutely surrendered to their partner. But people aren't. It's all about me and what I'm going to get out of it. And you're not making me happy, okay? This is a totally opposite dynamic.
So there's specific practices.
Specific in mindset. It's developing a mindset of surrender, of love, of bhakti, of surrender. Bhakti, of love, of surrender. It's surrender. How many people do you see out in the world that are surrendered to their partners? Yeah, no, it doesn't happen. So you just don't say, yeah, you're married, go have sex and whatever. No. Very few. Nobody said there are not some. There are very few, okay? There's a lot of divorce in the world. Most people get married, and what is it? It's about, you're not making me happy. You're not fulfilling my dreams. You're not you. You're not giving to me what I want. So, yeah, it can be a very good part of the path if you can learn to surrender. To give 100% openly and then surrender. It's a difficult part. It's a great, you know, because nobody can push your buttons like your significant other. Huh? They find every button that's there. Okay. So, yeah, it can be a great, great help on the path if you understand what's taking place. They can be a great aid, a great help to you on the path. Okay. But this takes, you know, couples counseling on how to do that, how to move into that dynamic. Can you talk about fatigue, emotional fatigue, and spiritual fatigue? I was speaking a little bit about this on the net the other day, about vairagya versus the fatigue, apathy, vairagya versus apathy. Vairagya is non-attachment. If there's no attachment there, it means you're in flow with the harmony of the universe. Okay? It's flow. It's calm. It's centeredness. Okay? There's nothing being grabbed any longer. But it's not apathy. Apathy is giving up. Doesn't matter what I'm going to do. I'm not going to progress. I'm not good enough. It's fear that turns in on itself, shuts down. It's not open. Vairagya is open awareness. Apathy is closed. It's being closed, closing down. If you find yourself closing down, getting into apathy, then some of the practices are hitting too much too close to home, and you're closing off. Okay, you're closing off. It's time to that at that point start to develop gratitude and see more of the divine. See every moment as a part of the divine. Make it sacred. Every moment is a part of sacredness. So if you change that mindset and start looking for sacredness in this moment, then it's going to start to open that up. But yeah, a lot of people, they fall into apathy. It's a negative mindset. It's a closing down. It's like, well, I'm not getting there fast enough, or whatever the mindset is, and then they start going into apathy. And they confuse apathy with vairagya, with non-attachment. Non-attachment doesn't mean pushing away. Non-attachment just means that when it's there, you enjoy it for what it is, and when it's gone, it's gone. Okay, next experience. I don't need to cling to this. Okay, well, it's there, you enjoy it immensely. When it's gone, next experience, that's all. You appreciate, you have openness, you have awareness, you're with the flow, the harmony of the universe, okay? If you're in harmony with the universe, it's going to bring what you need when you need it. If it's surrendered to that, then you know what is coming is for your best good, no matter how it appears at the time. Therefore, you're grateful. Yeah. It's a whole cycle that happens. But the apathy is when you close down and think, oh, I need to push everything away because I'm not going to be attached. You start closing up. Then you go into apathy. So you don't want to feel. I don't want to feel. So don't exchange apathy. Don't take on apathy and think it's vairagya. It's not.
I mean, I would define flow as bliss. I mean, is it following bliss? When we were with Gumaraji, I mean, everybody had bliss written everywhere. I mean, really, when you're in flow, it's pure bliss.
Can be.
Yeah, I mean, you deal with life, but if you can you're truly in flow, then flow is the experience of bliss.
Flow is also the experience of just peace as well. Doesn't need to be, you know, you jumping off the walls and, you know. But peace is bliss. Peace is bliss. But people don't understand that. You think you have to be, you know, running around like a, you know, cuckoo bird all the time and just, you know, But it's not always that. It can be that gentle peace as well, that stillness, that calmness is also a type of bliss. Okay. I used to be in that type of overwhelming, like Swamiji down south, you'll see him. He's in that type of overwhelming, that bliss, what people think of bliss. I'm not. I'm in, more in that steady calm. I've been in that type of bliss, but I would rather be in this steady calm. Okay. It's also bliss, but it's not the bouncing off the wall, joyous type of, you know, looking like I'm drugged. But it's still a type of bliss when you know the alternative of what it is. So we've reached the end of the questions in the satsang bowl. Do we have any other questions before we take a break and go into meditation? No? Good. Good. So we'll go ahead and close out this part of the satsang today. And we'll go ahead and go into take a break and then have a meditation session. Thank you for coming.